My heart was broken. It's always gonna be broken.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Narrative First Podcast, the weekly podcast where story is always king. I am your host, Jim Hull, the voice of Narrative First, and this is episode number 34, What Story Structure Looks Like to Your Characters. Welcome back to another rousing round of story structure and story analysis. I am your host, Jim Hull, and today we'll be speaking about all kinds of great and wonderful story structure things that you can add to your own writing, and then you can check them out when you go watch movies, or you read a book, or you watch a play, or you watch some television, anything to do with narrative. You're bound to learn something in this podcast that will help you better understand what's actually going on behind the scenes. Some follow-up for the site. I finally managed to get the member pages to work. So if you are a member, you know, you can either be a monthly subscriber or a yearly subscriber. Go ahead and go to narrativefirst.com/membership, and there's a link there to the login page, or you can just go to narrativefirst.com/login and type in your username and reset your password, and you'll be on your way, and you'll be able to get the story forms, all the different story forms that we've discovered over the last 10 years or so on our site, and then also the gists, the super gist collections. Actually, they're not really super gists, they're the Narrative First Gist Collections, which are hundreds of thousands of different gists that you can plug into Dramatica. And there will be more tutorial videos, the story forming videos, the character arc videos, all that stuff will be there for those of you who are subscribers. So once again, go ahead and check that out, narrativefirst.com/membership, and you should be good to go. There is a chance you might not get a success message from the email sent, but trust me, check your inbox, it's there. There's only so much I can do. At least you can go get the stuff, and you don't have to write me an email asking me why it doesn't work. It now works. Also this week, we put up our next installment of Throughline Thursdays. Last week was Arrival, because I was really hot on Arrival. And this week we did Manchester by the Sea, the Laugh Riot. Everybody loves a good cry, Manchester by the Sea.
My heart was broken. It's always gonna be broken.
That's pretty good, right? John Oliver ruined that scene for me forever. Yes, so what I would really love to do is to actually do a full in-depth analysis of Manchester by the Sea, but I'm waiting for somebody who is using that film as their Dramatica Story Expert certification before I do it. It's not like I want to pimp it and say, oh, look at all the stuff that's here, before he's had a chance to actually finish it and become certified and all that stuff, because it is a fantastic film. It's a wonderful film, and the narrative in it is so super strong. Interestingly enough, it's close to Arrival. I mean, the overall story and relationship story are flipped. You know, the overall story for Arrival was in Activity, and the overall story for Manchester is in Manner of Thinking. You know, it's not like everybody's... There's not a whole lot of war and fighting and sabotage going on in Manchester by the Sea. It's more about... It's hard to say manipulating, because that's one of those places where adjusting the Dramatica terminology, trying to make it easier for people to understand, kind of loses some of its accuracy. You know, the original term for manipulation was psychology, which to me is so much better. Manner of Thinking is in between the two. That's the one I actually use on the Throughline Thursdays. Because it's just about a way of thinking, as opposed to, like, what you actually think, which is where Fixed Attitude is. That, to me, has always been the key difference between the two, is the what and how. So the psychology is how you think, how you go about processing thoughts, and then the Fixed Attitude is what you actually think. So in Manchester by the Sea, the overall story there, it's not so much about manipulation, but there's a lot of psychological, there's a lot of dysfunction going on among everybody, and, you know, people trying to figure out exactly what's going to happen with Patrick. And of course, there's some psychological manipulation from beyond the grave with Lee's brother. Lee is the Casey Affleck character. His brother Joe, who obviously put in the will that he wanted his brother to take care of his son. So there's kind of some manipulation there. And everybody wants to, you know, honor his wishes and do all that stuff. And that's where the source of the conflict comes from in the story. And Affleck is in a really bad place, really bad attitude. I mean, he's so unlikable, which would be great if we could stop trying to make every character likable all the time. Because the only important thing is that we actually empathize with him. And we empathize with him because he has an issue which is personally tied to the overall story. The thing that's holding him back is the same thing that's kind of propelling the overall story forward, which is what connects him. That's the thematic tissue that connects him into the story. It doesn't matter whether or not he's likable or not. He just is. And then the brother's son, Patrick, is the influence character in situation. You know, he's a young teenager, fatherless, kind of almost the same sort of issues that Lee goes through. I mean, there could possibly be a cliched you and I moment. If you haven't seen the You and I montage, it's great because Chris always constantly updates it. And you could always add more and more scenes to it. I forget what film I was... Actually, I think it was Arrival. They had a You and I moment between... I can't remember her name. Between the main character and her future love interest. The guy who has the bone arrow in the Avengers movies. And he defused bombs, the Hurt Locker. All of a sudden, his name escapes me too. Anyways... they had a You and I moment, kind of like the You and I moment in How to Train Your Dragon, where it's like whoever wrote those films knew that there should be You and I moment, but they kind of put it between the wrong characters. You know, it's like, oh, I've heard this phrase a million times. I know it should be here in the story, but no, that's the wrong person. You know, the You and I moment in Dragon should have been between Hiccup and his father, and the You and I moment in Arrival should have been between the main character and the aliens. For some reason, I'm blanking on names this morning. But you know who I'm talking about. She was the princess in Enchanted. Which, you haven't seen it, there's a really great scene where one rabbit kicks the other rabbit. That's a really wonderfully animated scene. And then the relationship through line in Manchester is Activity. And it's not like they're going at it, you know, fighting each other or arguing, you know, coming up against one another with activities. But it's mainly the conflict comes from, you know, the kid trying to get together with this girl and trying to get Lee to get together with this girl's mom and then having to drive him to practice all the time. Just basically the activity of raising a teenage son when you haven't had that experience, you haven't had that time in between. That's where the core of their relationship finds its conflict. So you put those all together and you get Manchester by the Sea. And you get nominated for an Oscar. And you win one if you're the actor. The reason why that film works so well is because of that balance of the different sources of conflict. The through lines in Dramatica, they're not this arbitrary thing that comes out of nowhere. They're the four different ways that you can find or you can classify conflict. You can either see it as an external situation, an external process, an internal process, or an internal situation or state. You know, it's the difference between states and processes and external and internal. And you really can't classify conflict any other way. And what's developed over centuries and centuries of storytelling is this idea that, well, if we can put different contexts to these different sources of conflict, then we can actually cover all the bases and actually provide a complete argument and say, well, you know, this is the best way to solve an issue. And that's the core of what Dramatica is all about. And when you're arranging these through lines, I keep forgetting to do it, but I got a really mean email about how the analyses on the site, you know, basically forcing films into Dramatica's point of view. And it's not really that as much as it is finding the one story form that feels the best for the entire narrative. You know, you look, there's 32,000 plus different story forms that you could possibly have with all the different choices and switches that you could flip in Dramatica. So it's not like there's this one set beat sheet or sequence of events that are supposed to occur that I'm forcing into or that anyone who uses Dramatica is forcing into. It's more trying to find the unique combination of different elements that actually form the holographic image or intent of what the author is trying to say. That's the really fun part. That's the fun part, is getting all the different parts together. You can move around knowing that the main character and influence character have to be diagonally opposed, and the overall story and relationship story have to be diagonally opposed to create the greatest amount of conflict in both those contexts. There's only one combination that actually feels right. I mean, you can maybe put Lee maybe in situation, and then, but then it's like, who goes in fixed attitude against him? And, you know, you can only arrange them. It would be great. Some future version of Dramatic would be so great. It would be great if we get it on iOS, too, since it's only been 10 years since we've had iOS devices. If you could, you know, kind of drag and drop the through lines into the different domains, and you could actually visually see, wait, if I move it over to, if I drag Lee from here into situation, that's going to pop Patrick into fixed attitude. It's like, oh, okay, wait, no, I want to move it over here. And it would just be great to see how that works. So hopefully a future version of Dramatica or something quite like it will have that functionality. So it's not like you're arbitrarily trying to force in a story and look for certain things. You're trying to find the one unique combination. That's why I got so excited about Arrival, was because, you know, her issue of falsehood under memories, that's exactly what she's dealing with. And in, I can't resist, in Manchester, you know, Lee is dealing with a lot of evidence. I mean, there's just, it's overwhelming. That's why he doesn't want to go to Manchester. He doesn't want to be anywhere near there, because there's just too much evidence there, too much of a reminder of what he was responsible for. And it's almost like Manchester itself, it kind of works a bit as the situation character, kind of impacting him and challenging him to face that evidence that he left behind. So be sure to check that out. You can either find it at narrativefirst.com/throughlines. You'll see it at the top, or you'll see it at the front page if you're there this week. And if you have any suggestions, somebody just suggested The Incredibles, which is interesting because it's already been done. It's already a story form on the Central Dramatica site, and I use it as an example a lot of times, but I guess I can see how perhaps an explanation of why the through lines are where they are, why that makes more sense than perhaps another combination. I'm pretty sure the question is, how come the overall story is in psychology instead of activity? You would think a superhero movie is all about, you know, the actual punching, kicking, fighting, all that stuff, when really, you know, in Dramatica, you're looking for the source of conflict. So what you're really looking for is, you know, where's the trouble coming from? And in The Incredibles, it's not the punching, kicking, fighting. It's people having to pretend to be something they're not, or people who are pretending to be something they are not, in the case of Syndrome. And that's where you're getting all kinds of conflict in there. And then the relationship story is the husband and wife. The husband is, quote-unquote, cheating behind the wife's back and all those activities. That's where the relationship is finding its greatest source of conflict. Also this week, finally managed to get the video from the Roman Holiday Dramatica Users Group Analysis. Got that up online, and it's on the YouTubes, and I will link to it in the show notes here. You can also find it, all the stuff attached to a certain analysis, you can find it on Dramatica.com. You'll find it under Dramatica.com/analysis, and then /, and then the film. So in this case, it would be Roman Holiday. And that way you'll be able to, and there's dashes in wherever there's spaces. This is 2017, everybody should know this by now. Or you can always search for it if you would like. The Roman Holiday analysis is shorter than usual. It's only about an hour and a half. But it's a great one to watch, especially if you're coming off of last week's podcast in regards to the most boring story form in the entire world. That's the film that I was talking about last week. So you can actually, you'll be able to hear, because I'm the guy behind the camera, you'll be able to hear the exact moment when I'm like, whoa, here we go. Oh, brother, not this story form. And then where it goes from there. So once again, that'll be the Roman Holiday Dramatica Users Group Analysis video cast. Speaking of Roman Holiday, as I was putting together the video and publishing it to YouTube, at the end there was some great discussion about lots of different things. Because it was so short, then it's, you know, basically a round robin. It's like, all right, Chris, now we've got all these questions, and then you ask them. And I think I alluded to it last week. But there was one part that I thought I lost, which was somebody had asked, if you have a main character who is a linear problem solver, does that always mean that the influence character is a holistic problem solver? because it seems like, you know, if you put the, when you look at the main character approach, so every main character is either a doer or a beer, they have a preference for either taking external action first or internalizing things first, that the influence character is always on the opposite of that. Because they're diagonally opposed, they will always be in the opposite place. So it always feels like, well, if the main character's a doer, then the influence character's a beer. If the main character's a beer, the influence character's a doer. And that works because structurally that's how it all lays out. And then, so then the other thought is, well, if one's linear, is the other one holistic? And you could see that in, you know, your typical Star Wars combo where Luke is a linear main character and Ben is obviously has more of a holistic appreciation of things. And then you can almost see the exact opposite in The Matrix, where Keanu is a holistic main character and Morpheus is all about linearity, just getting it done, which is interesting. I never thought about that. It might actually make an interesting article. They, you know, a lot of people always compare Star Wars and The Matrix, they're the same story, but with the flip main character problem solving and with the influence character flipped, that's actually a really interesting subject matter for an article. Just jot that one down in the old to-do list. Get that up probably sometime in the middle of 2018 or 2019 by the time I get to it. But you heard it here first. The flip between Star Wars and The Matrix. Very interesting. So the question was posed to Chris, you know, are they always balanced? Do you always want a linear? Do you always want a holistic? And, well, Chris had this to say.
I just have a general question.
Okay. Well, I'm not a general, but I can think I can
help. All right. You can be in the overall story.
Actually, he might be. It could be a major crisis. Yeah.
But if either the main character or the influence character is linear, does that automatically mean the other is holistic?
No, but okay. It frequently happens that way.
All right.
It's one of those things where it's not a must, but storytelling convention frequently does it that way because you want to have in every item that's in a every choice has multiple options. And those other options need to show up somehow in the story. So making it sort of into the corresponding character or somewhere in there sort of takes care of that. The easiest way is if for the main and influence characters, one's one way, make the other one the other way.
Okay.
You could make the same argument, just not place it in the same in that influence character. It's just you do want to have the alternative, otherwise they'll be like, well, why didn't they look at it holistically? Because why didn't somebody look at it holistically?
Right.
You know, because you've got, so for instance, in Chinatown, you've got a very, very linear detective who's not looking at things holistically. And the influence character is not particularly a holistic character. She certainly doesn't look to all... She's concerned with the relationships, but she really seems to be kind of blind to it. However, her father, who's the antagonist, he absolutely looks at things very holistically.
Yes.
You know, and he's the one who's got the web in, and owns the police and owns, you know, everything. You know, is responsible for just about everything. And if his daughter had realized that, if she was truly a holistic thinker, she would have kind of been aware, I would think, of his relationship, the police's relationship to him, because when she pulls the gun and shoots him, that just, you know, that's what eventually leads, oh, spoiler alert, if you've not seen the movie yet. you know, that's kind of what gives carte blanche to the police to shoot her.
Because it's Chinatown.
Yes.
But Jake doesn't get it because he's an understanding character, so he just misunderstands everything. Mm. That's why they forget that Jake is Chinatown. It's like, you'll never understand.
Okay.
Because Jake's a really, really, this is a world that's ruled by holistic thinkers, and he's a really straight-laced linear thinker who just does not see anything unless it's all laid out. Nice little connected dots.
So you can see, I mean, it would be great, and of course, you know, you always want balance and everything. It would be great, perfection. But sometimes, you know, it doesn't work out that way. It doesn't have to be, so you don't feel like you have to force yourself into it. I know a lot of people, when they come to Dramatica, they want to get all the rules right. And then they read the theory book, and the rules are kind of confusing because it's not quite as clear, but there's something there, and they just want, you know, to be told exactly what to do, which I understand in the beginning. But, I mean, you don't necessarily have to have the balance because the message will be the same. I mean, it might be slightly different. There might be some slight color change to it if they're both linear, which is great because one of the features that I'm consulting on now, both main characters are clearly linear, even though I tried to do holistic. That was naughty, Jim. You want to make sure that you always at least show the main character's problem-solving style. And, you know, you either make it linear or holistic. As long as you show that, that's fine. And either the audience will infer the problem-solving style of the influence character, or you can explicitly make it so. I'm super excited to talk about last week's article, Generating Tension Within Each Act of Your Story. It's coming off the entire series of, you know, plotting your story with Dramatica. And I keep thinking I'm going to end the series, but then I start writing the article, and then I come up with some really great examples, and then it's fun to explain it to everybody and put it into graphs and charts and show how it all plays out. And so I'm probably going to end up stringing it out another week, maybe another week after that. And then I thought to myself, it'd be great, you know, this week is just about the acts, and last week was about the, or actually 2 weeks ago was about the goal. This week was about the acts, you know, what it looks like from the point of view of your characters. I was thinking just the other day when I was running, it'd be great to do the sequences. I actually have a film where I went through and figured out all the sequences and how that works. And then even the scenes, that would be literally crazy. That would be functionally insane to do scenes so that you could basically sit down with Dramatica and have it tell you exactly what to do in each and every scene, and maybe even each line of dialogue. That would be the best. That's when Dramatica turns in on itself. Yeah, I'm really excited about this article. If you are a subscriber to the site, or you know, you're part of the email list, you already received it in your inbox on Tuesday. I am going to switch to Tuesdays. It just makes more sense. I got way more feedback with the emails delivered on Tuesday than I do Friday. So I guess people would get it Friday and completely forget about it because they're thinking about the weekend. But Tuesday, seems like Tuesday, everybody would love to talk about story and ask all kinds of questions. So I'm going to move the newsletter for every article to Tuesday for now. And plus it gives me more time to add some goodness to it. But in that article, Generating Dramatic Tension Within Each Act of Your Story, I go through and show how what the story form actually looks like from the point of view of your characters. Now this is compelling because a lot of times story structure is taught as always from the point of view of the characters, as if it's like they're the gods of structure. Like, they're the ones driving the story. And Dramatica has a very, very different take on how story works. I think I mentioned recently, the most fun or the most rewarding aspects of doing this whole thing, of just going full-time Dramatica and doing the Dramatica mentorship program and all kinds of analyses and all this, is not actually what I teach to other people, but what they teach to me. Oh, that's nice. And I actually learn more by working with other people than I would if I was just sitting in my room by myself trying to write the next great American screenplay. So instead, I'm actually learning from everyone. I'm always learning something more because I'm constantly challenged to prove the efficacy or the accuracy of Dramatica, and it always makes me move into areas that I take for granted, that I just assume, well, I guess that, yeah, of course that's how it works. And it's probably just because that's how my brain works. I think my brain is specifically geared more towards a Dramatica perspective on story, whereas most people look at it, you know, from a primary, like a subjective view, like from the point of view of the characters. And there can be miscommunication, you know, a lot of times when you're trying to speak with someone who sees things differently, you know, sees it from the other side, and you're trying to articulate how Dramatica works, it can come off as arbitrary or kind of needless or kind of a waste of time. And one of those places where it's taught is in the university. I receive emails all the time. You know, I've worked with people that go to these screenwriting programs, and you know, where they not complain, but they express their concern over the refusal or failure of teachers or professors to, not so much that they wouldn't consider dramatic a point of view, but that they're so locked into their own point of view, and sometimes they seem incompatible. In places they seem compatible, in places they don't, and there's an actual theoretical, concrete reason for that, which we'll get into in a second. But there is this thing where it's like, you know, I know all this stuff, and I read narrative first, and I listen to the podcast, and all this stuff makes sense, and it's really cool, and I feel like I'm discovering, like, secrets of story, and I want to apply them. But then I go to this place where I'm spending an incredible amount of money, and they got all the connections, and they have cool things to say too, but I wish there was some way that they could meet together, and they could work. And the main reason for that is this difference between the objective point of view of a story and the subjective point of view of a story. Structurally, Dramatica has both, but if you think of, I wrote an article last year called The Veil Between the Author and the Audience, and I really love that article because I think I did a really good job of explaining this thing, this concept that Chris Huntley, one of the co-creators of Dramatica, would always say, or he's been saying recently at meetings and stuff, where the story form itself is like this thin sheet of parchment. I forget, well, probably wasn't as poetic. Probably would just say, this is a piece of paper. But there's just this thin veil, right? If you have the audience on the left-hand side, and, oh, no, let's put the author on the left-hand side and the audience on the right-hand side, right? So they're the ones receiving it. And if you put the story form, like, right in the middle, there are these, like, little touch point, little holes. I even think I did a podcast on this. But there are these little areas where the two people can see each other from the other side, you know? And those points are the actual story points in the story form. Main character resolve, the overall story symptom, the story consequences, story dividends, the influence character's unique ability. Those story points, there's 75 of them in the story form right now, are the gap between the objective view of the author and the subjective view of the audience. So it's as if, you know, if the author is trying to say something, you know, he puts it out there and the audience hears it, and the parts where they're actually able to communicate to one another and hear everything, amongst all the noise of the storytelling and the visual epicness of, you know, if it's a magnificent film or the flowery poetry, if it's written, you know, the message that they get out of it is that story form right in the middle. So the audience on that right-hand side, that's the subjective view of story. And that's 95% of what is taught either in the universities or in screenwriting books or writing books. It's all subjective because that's the fun part, right? Because you get to be the character, you get to imagine yourself in the shoes of your character and write about their favorite food and write about, you know, what it felt like growing up and all that stuff, which is great because you get that voice there. But then you don't actually get the objective view of what's really going on. And when you write primarily from a subjective view, that's where you hit story holes and where you're going to run into walls like writer's block because you can't see to the other side. You need an objective view of things, you know, God's eye view of what's going on. Why do you need that God's eye view? Well, because that's how you get meaning. That's how you're actually able to see it. By definition, a subjective view is missing parts. You know, it's like, I have blind spots. You know, I can't see this. And that's why, you know, you end up finding somebody, hopefully, that can see your blind spots and fill them in. And that way you guys can cover everything. Same thing with, hopefully as a writer, you find a story consultant or a Dramatica story expert to help you fill in the gaps and kind of give you the objective overall view of it. I mean, you can certainly do it on your own. It's just a matter of being comfortable with bouncing back and forth between subjective and objective. Primarily, I feel way more comfortable on the objective side. Again, it's probably because that's how my brain works. It just feels more comfortable being on that side. I like seeing everything in its totality and understanding the reason for a scene in a story, the reason for this. A lot of times, people will want to throw in scenes that are just, you know, passive storytelling or active storytelling. They're not really part of the essential form of the story, but they add color and they're important because they make it human. They make it more attractive and more, you know, somebody you actually want to hang out with, not just this like robot. Melanie's always talking about the personality of a story, and that's what those storytelling scenes, that's how they get that flavor in there. So you need that subjective view. It's not like you don't need it. It's not like Dramatica is all you need it, and you never need to look at it from the point of view of your characters and stuff that's taught at universities. The master writer, I think the best version is the person who can combine both. One of the things that is taught from the subjective point of view is the sequence method. I was completely new to this. I think I had some inkling of it. There was a program that used to be called StoryView, which I wrote about last year. I tried to install it on my Mac and spent a couple days and $100 and installed everything. And boy, do I still hate Windows, because you have to click 20 times to get something to happen. And right now it's called Outliner 4D, but it was this great program made by the same people that made Dramatica and made Movie Magic Screenwriter, where you can outline your story. It's essentially an outliner that you can either do, you know, linearly from top to bottom, or you can do from left to right. And then when you look in the timeline view, you can actually drag from the individual scenes and track different story points, which is, for a Dramatica person, it's heaven. I mean, again, if you want to talk about the next version of Dramatica in the future world, it would be great if this could somehow get in there and be, you know, all touch-enabled. Touch-enabled? Oh. That might be a different kind of program. But I remember in the examples, the Lord of the Rings example, there was these dramatic questions. They're like, well, will Frodo be able to get the ring to Mordor? And I would read that and think, wow, why is that so important? And I think it did say, based on the sequence method by Paul Golino. And it doesn't make any sense to me, because why is that important? Yeah, I know that's what the story's about. And I guess the idea is that it's a great way to understand how your characters feel tension in a story. And I've always taken tension for granted. I mean, I just feel like you put the right pieces into place and of course there's going to be tension. You know, you put pursuit and avoid in the same room and there's going to be conflict. Why do I need to ask a question like, well, who's, will so-and-so get across to the other side of the room? It's like, well, that's the whole point of narrative, isn't it? But I realize there are some people that like that, and they like coming from that point of view, and they really like diving into the heads of the characters. And the key work that I've been doing the last couple months is finding a way of giving that Dramatica view to the subjective view. So in Dramatica, there's one report, the famous plot sequence report, which gives you an idea of what the story structure looks like from the point of view of character. I'm not really speaking about that. I'm kind of speaking more about the story in an overall sense. And what I've been using are the static plot points. Now, for the longest time, I never even touched these things. I mean, I would always figure out the story goal of my story and stories that I would help people with, and I would do the story consequence. But when it came to requirement and prerequisites, I would think, well, that's just, that's a little too much. There's already enough to think about, you know, problem, solution, symptom, and response for each through line. And, you know, it's enough trying to deal with all that. And 20 years later, I'm finally ready to find ways to use the requirements and prerequisites. Preconditions, I always love the preconditions. Those are the non-essential steps that are kind of tacked on. You know, if you need help getting across the bridge, you need to pay somebody something or, you know, teach them a lesson, or there's just some non-essential thing that you have to do to get across the bridge. I always liked those because they seemed almost character-based. It was like, oh, it's always attached to a character. Like, what character would be the represent the story preconditions, and he'll be this pain in the ass because it's like, oh, all right, we got to deal with this in order to get to the end. But costs and dividends, I could care less about costs and dividends. I have a feeling they might be way more important than I imagine, and I have a feeling they have something to do with scene structure. Oh, yet another future article that I need to jot down in the to-do list. One second. Yeah, I feel costs and dividends are probably more about scenes. In Forewarnings, Armando has a great way of using it, the 30-second story approach or whatever to Dramatica. He has a really great way of using forewarnings. But I never use these things because they're at the bottom of the story engine settings report. And Chris used to go over them after every analysis way back when, you know, the first decade of when I was there. Recently, he hasn't done it as much. He does it occasionally, but I just never saw the point of them until I started working with people in the Dramatica Mentorship Program. One writer in particular, Brian Davis, who's a great screenwriter and a brilliant story theorist. I'm sure you'll be hearing a lot from him in the future. He mentioned to me when we were working this idea of the different questions. So getting back to the sequence method, will so-and-so, I guess if you think of it this way, so the entire story has its own central dramatic question, which I talked about in two episodes ago and wrote about finding the central dramatic question in your story, which I will link in the show notes. Okay, so that's the big one. You know, will Frodo get the ring to Mordor and all that stuff? And then each act itself has its own individual questions. And finding these questions and thinking of the answers to these questions makes it really easy to figure out plot, like what's going to happen in those acts. I mean, I was always relying on the various signposts, you know, the overall story signposts and the sequences that are in that plot sequence report. But you can actually use these things, and they're great, really simple, just essential things that happen in the story leading up to that goal. And that's why I got carried away with that Fractal Nature article about 2 weeks ago, where I talked about how the pattern that you see at the top is repeated down, you know, from level to level. And so when you look at take for instance the requirements and the prerequisites, they happen on a global scale, and then they can happen in individual acts. Like each act would have its own requirement and prerequisite, and then each sequence would have requirements and prerequisites. You can take them, you know, if you could, again, future Dramatica, if you could turn a dial, it'd be great. If there's a little knob, you can turn the resolution up or down depending on how fine you want to work a certain area of your story. You can do that. And Brian mentioned to me, well, yeah, that Act 2 question, that's just the requirement, right? And I'd never thought of it before. Of course, I jumped right to Star Wars, because you always do Star Wars, because everything goes back to Star Wars, right? And their story requirement for Star Wars was learning, and that just made perfect sense. Well, yeah, of course, are they going to learn how to blow up the Death Star? And then, conversely, will the Empire learn where the Rebels are hiding out? I thought, well, that's actually great. Two things. I've never thought of tension before in my life, and I never thought of these different dramatic tension questions, but I have thought of requirements before, you know, because I was always sitting on the objective point of view. I never saw it from the subjective point of view. And this will make it easier, too, in future consultations and working with other people. And if you are trying to teach someone Dramatica, or you're trying to help somebody, if you're writing a story with somebody who is totally not into Dramatica, but you're really into it, is always try and take that subjective point of view. Know that the story point is, like, let's say, for instance, the requirement, and then couch it in terms of the characters. Well, okay, I know the requirement is they need to learn how to blow up the Death Star. Okay, so then I guess the tension is like, oh, all right, will we figure it out? Will we learn, you know, how to blow up the Death Star? You just couch it in more of a subjective point of view. And then from the requirements, of course, I jumped instantly to the prerequisites. And I've done a drawing I mentioned before and in this article last week, that when it comes to learning Dramatica, for me, I need more visual clues. That's why I get so excited about, you know, creating those Throughline Thursdays and other slideshows and different presentations that I've done in the past. So I put up a quick sketch of how I visualize the static plot points. And the prerequisites are the things that lead up to the requirements that lead up to the goal. So instantly, you know, once I thought about that Act 2 question of Star Wars, I went to the prerequisites, which was conceiving. And if you want a quick little hint here, which will always save your butt, especially if you don't, if it'll be another 10 years before the iOS version of Dramatica comes out. The prerequisites are the diagonal opposite to the requirements. So if you look under activity and you look to learning, it's in the lower right quadrant of activity in the Dramatica table of story elements, okay? So if you go diagonally across and you find the same thing in the lower right in the psychology or manipulation quadrant, you'll see conceiving, right? Because, again, everything's fractal and everything relates. You know, like past is to memory, you'll see them in the same spot. So learning, like past is to memory as learning is to conceiving. And trust me, there is some kind of connection there. You'll start to feel it, and you'll start to understand it more. But if you ever know the requirement, you can automatically figure out the prerequisite that way. That's what I do in my head. So, of course, I knew learning was the requirement for Star Wars, and then so I jumped to conceiving, and I thought, oh, could that be the Act 1 question? And sure enough, it works great, especially from the point of view of Luke. Like, will he conceive of the idea that he's essential to destroying the Death Star? Like, he's essential to the fight, to the rebellion. And that whole first act is trying to get him to conceive that possibly he should be the one to do that. And that instantly my brain lit up, because, well, one, it's Dramatica, and my brain always lights up on Dramatica. But then also this idea that, wow, this is just yet another great, cool way of using the story form to help people write stories and to, you know, better figure out and understand what's going on in a story in a way that's not, to me, arbitrary. So asking questions, you know, I linked to central dramatic questions before that were, and I spoke about it in the Finding Dramatic Tension in your story about these arbitrary questions that have nothing to do with structure. They're just tied to nothing. It's just like my opinion, my subjective opinion, and I guess this is what I think. The dramatic question is, I think this is what the characters are thinking. When it's not really tied to a structure, things aren't coherent and congruent. You know, I'm writing an article this week where I'm talking about, I was going to split up into different acts, and I ended up just doing more two-act structures, and I speak about how that act two questions, especially in Star Wars, how it applies to both. Like, it applies to not only Luke, but also applies to the Empire. It applies to any of the objective characters, because the static plot points, those apply to everyone. You know, when you read about tension and sequence method and stuff like that, they always try and just make it just about the main character slash protagonist. But really, it can apply to any of the objective characters. And that's why that act two works great. It's like, well, will the Rebels slash Luke learn how to destroy the Death Star? And will the Empire learn where the hidden Rebel base is? You could apply it to pretty much anyone. And the same thing with the prerequisites in the first act. So you use the story requirements to generate the dramatic question of your second act, and use the story prerequisites to create the dramatic question of your first act. And that, to me right there, that will help you. It's almost like Chris always tells people, well, if you just get the four through lines, if you just do that, you'll be 90% ahead of everyone else. Which is so true. I mean, you can read stuff, see stuff on TV and in the movies all the time. If you at least have those four through lines, you'll be way ahead of the game. And I feel like this too, just having the story requirements and the story prerequisites at an act level, you do that and you're still way, way, way ahead of the game. I mean, I'm just starting to use it now with other writers and working with them to be able to incorporate those different steps into the plotting out of their story. I mean, in the mentorship program, you essentially write out, you know, your first treatment, and we just, you know, go back and forth and just layer in all these different concepts from Dramatica. And just being able to see that just propels the treatment, like, into the stratosphere. It really makes a difference. And the writers love it because now they have a great handle on their story. They know exactly what it seems like from the point of view of their characters. Their characters, you know, again, the characters are that audience on the right-hand side looking at the story form, and you're the author, the god, you know, creating the story form and poking those holes in the veil. And from the point of view of the characters, they look up and they see that structure. They see you poking holes in there, and they're like, okay, first I need to conceive, or I feel this tension because there's some conceiving that needs to be going on. You know, there's some inequity from a lack of conceiving or too much conceiving or, you know, whatever. And then once I resolve that, now I'm trying to learn, or there's too much learning, or people are trying to gather information about me or trying to teach me something. And that's stressful. But once I break through that, then I'm actually finally able to do something about it. And that's Star Wars' goal. Star Wars' is? Star Wars' goal is doing. It's not blowing up the Death Star. It's actually just fighting against the Empire, and I'll cover that in this week's article. But you have the story prerequisite, which leads to the story requirement, which leads to the story goal, all motivated by the consequence. So if you just use those four static plot points, I'm sure this will change the more I learn about this and the more I work with other writers. But for right now, just knowing that, it's so exciting. It's great. In the article, I talk about the sixth sense and how it's funny because, you know, you'll find a lot of repeats with these story points, but they're in service of different goals. You know, the story requirement of the sixth sense is learning, and the story prerequisite is conceiving. So in the first act, it's like, will Malcolm get the idea that there's something more going on here than the usual diagnosis? So it's like, will that conceiving go on? And then you have the midpoint, where he reveals his little secret, which scared the crap out of everybody way back when. Then it's all about learning. Will Malcolm learn why Cole has this ability and help the kid communicate the truth before it is too late? And that works in service of understanding. So the goal in the sixth sense is not fighting against the Empire or destroying the Death Star. It's about understanding what's wrong with this kid. And because of the different various dynamic choices and structural choices made when writing The Sixth Sense, you get the same story requirement and the same story prerequisite that you did in Star Wars, but the goal is completely different. You know, the goal in Star Wars is doing, the goal in The Sixth Sense is understanding what's wrong with this kid. But you can see how that leads up to it. So it's not one size fits all. You're not trying to force a story arbitrarily into some system. It's actually speaking about how narrative works, how it builds up, how you create a story. When you're trying to problem solve and you're trying to work through justifications and blind spots, these are the steps or the progress or the development that you have to go through in order to make a story feel true. To conclude, I just want to read this from the article. Dramatic tension is not random and it is not happenstance. It flows naturally from the combination of story points carefully laid out to deliver a message of purpose or author's intent to an audience. Decipher your story's unique story form and you find the basis for accurately depicting tension in your own story. So again, I'm really excited about this new approach with story requirements and prerequisites. Be on the lookout for the article next week where I dive into 2-act, 3-act, and 4-act structures and the difference between them and how, you know, there's only two of them, so how does it apply when you have 3 major movements and 4 major movements? And then, of course, from there, we'll get into sequences and it'll get really fun. If you have any questions, feel free to write to narrativefirst.com/contact. Have a great week of writing, and I will see you next time.